2 weeks ago, I introduced a new theme, servant-hearted leadership. And it's the story of how Jesus turned the world upside down. Or rather, he turned it right side up. And how he changed the very nature of what was considered greatness. And it's absolutely essential that any church that wants to be a church, it's essential that its members, and especially its leaders, understand and live by what Jesus said and did about this matter. Because whatever the world's ways of defining greatness, and particularly greatness as it relates to exercising authority, whenever the world's ways of exercising authority creep into the church, it becomes something other than a church. Jesus has a very different leadership model in mind for his church than what is common for worldly institutions. Jesus has a vision for his church that defies convention and goes against the grain of the natural way of things. And as we explored 2 weeks ago, he conveyed some of that vision to his chosen 12 disciples, the ones he was training to lead his church after his departure to return to the Father. When his disciples were arguing about which of them was greatest, Jesus took a child in his arms and said these surprising things: "Whoever takes the lowly position or the humble place of this little child will be greatest in the kingdom of heaven." And he said, "It is the one who is least among you all who is greatest." And he said, "Anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and a servant of all." And on another occasion, he pointed to the Pharisees, and he used their example to contrast what he wanted his disciples to be like, saying things like, "Beware of the teachers of the law. They love to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to have the most important seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at banquets." He said, "They love to be called rabbi by others." Rabbi, the Jewish title of honor for teacher. And then he said something shocking. "But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher, that would be Jesus, and you are all brothers." You are all brothers. He demolished the hierarchical model and put us all on the same level. Just brothers. Brothers and sisters. The Pharisees had their titles of honor, but to his church, Jesus said, "Don't let people call you that." And I think he meant this. I know it's convention to call someone pastor, but how is that any different from calling someone rabbi? You have to do some real creative rationalizing to say it's bad to call someone rabbi, but good to call someone pastor. Peter, in his second letter, refers to the Apostle Paul, not as the Apostle Paul, but our dear brother Paul. "I serve as a pastor or shepherd and have shepherding responsibility, as do all the elders of this church. But I much prefer being addressed as Brother Bruce to Pastor Bruce." If Jesus made a point of saying, "Don't give honorific titles to each other because you are all brothers," I certainly don't want to carry one of those titles. So I'm very happy to be your brother in the Lord. We are all brothers, brothers and sisters. But Jesus has much more work to do about reconstructing the disciples' vision for themselves as leaders in the church he's building. Because old ways die hard, and there is much in our nature that desires prestige, honor, and power. So Jesus cuts right to the root of it all. So let's look at what Jesus says next. Another matter arose that we only briefly mentioned 2 weeks ago. It says in Matthew chapter 20, verse 20, "Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to Jesus with her sons and, kneeling down, asked a favor of him." "What is it you want?" he asked. She said, "Grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom." the right and left of Jesus in his kingdom. Well, that's the number two and number three authority positions. Though Jesus has every right to rebuke them sharply for this selfish request, instead he mildly says that it's not him but his Father who will make that decision. But here's where it gets very interesting. The other 10 disciples hear what the brothers have been up to. The rumor spread that they were scheming for the top positions, and all of them were understandably miffed. Lesson number three, the contrast of the Gentiles. So Jesus calls the 12 together. They hadn't gotten the message from the child illustration or the contrast of the Pharisees. They hadn't picked it up from watching Jesus serve the needs of others. You see, Jesus has been serving all along. People come to him. He makes himself available to them. He listens to their problems. He prays for them. He heals them. He teaches them, counsels them, encourages them. Sometimes he even feeds them. He always puts the needs of others first. And you never see him dressed like royalty or demanding to be treated like royalty. Though he is Lord, he doesn't act lordly. Instead, he serves humbly and patiently. But this longing for power and position and rule and honor is so much a part of our sinful nature that the disciples are not getting the lesson. So Jesus calls them together, and just as he used the Pharisees as contrast, now he's using the rulers of the nations as contrast. He says in Matthew 20, verse 25, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, or dominate them, and their high officials exercise authority, or power, over them." And the disciples might be thinking, "Yes, yes, that's exactly what we want to do." But Jesus utters those crushing words, "Not so with you. You are not to be like that. Instead," is the word instead, which means that last thing I described, "I don't want you being like that." In fact, instead means the opposite. Instead, Luke 22, verse 26, "The greatest among you should be like the youngest." What? What's the point of being the greatest if you have to look like the youngest or least important? Isn't that what being the greatest is all about? What's the point of being great if you can't show off your greatness? Like the youngest? You can't mean that, Jesus. This is just killing our proud aspirations, our lordly designs, stabbing us in our proud little hearts, you are. Then Jesus says, "And the one who rules should be like the one who serves." Are you kidding me? What's the fun in ruling if you don't get to act like a ruler? Isn't that the whole point of being a ruler? You get to hold your head high, strike a lordly pose while others run to and fro at your bidding. But Jesus says we should look and act like servants instead. That's just death to the kingdom of self, which is exactly what Jesus intended to accomplish. He also says in Mark 10:43, "Instead," there's that word again, "instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all." Notice he's saying the same thing over and over in several different ways. Greatness lies in humble service. This is just soul-crushing to the ambitious. Now he gives a powerful argument for why his disciples should do this. If we need a because, here it is. Mark 10, verse 45. "For even the Son of Man," a name Jesus often refers to himself by, "even the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." That's Mark 10:42 through 45. If anyone has a right to be served, it's Jesus. But it's if Jesus is saying, if I, your Lord, didn't come to be served, but to serve, don't you see how unseemly, how out of place, how strange this would be if you, who are not lords, want to be served rather than serve? Then he gives his disciples another illustration that they should understand. In Luke 22, verses 24 through 27, Jesus describes a common lord-servant arrangement. The lord of the house sits at the table, and the servant serves him. Jesus asks them, "Who is greater, the one who is at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who is at the table?" Jesus acknowledges that this is what is commonly thought, this is the way of the world, that the man that sits at the table is greater, more important. But then he demolishes this view that he just described when he says, "But I am among you as one who serves." In other words, if you want to do things the way the world does, you'll sit at the table and have others serve you, and you will think yourself the greater. But you won't be like me. You won't be following my example. I am not the one sitting at the table. I'm the one serving. If you want to be like me, you will do likewise. What an earth-shaking message. But there is yet one more illustration to come, one that will turn the world upside down, one that will put the final nail in the coffin of the disciples' lordly ambitions. Next week, I'll tell you about that one. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I am found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. The Lord has promised good to me, His word my hope secures. He will my shield and portion be as long as life endures. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace hath brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun.